Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Viewpoints podcast series here on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel with my colleague Burkhard Varnholt. While the year is not even a month old, it has already sent many heads spinning in global markets. Volatility has risen as storms have been brewing in Tokyo and Nuuk, the capitals of Japan and Greenland, respectively. Meanwhile, global leaders are gathering at the 55th Summit of the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. And Burkhard, I know that you're there too, so maybe we can start by hearing about some of these developments at Davos could drive markets.
Well, sure, and thanks for having me. It's always great to be back. Davos is beautiful. The snow is fantastic. The sun's been shining all week. You know, you couldn't get it any better. This is picture perfect. But, you know, frankly, it's a bit bonkers and over the top. It's like an invasion of global leaders descending on this tiny town in the Alps. And it does have a bit of a surreal aspect to that. Well, you know, anyways, you know, they say at the West, what happens in Davos doesn't stay in Davos. They've been saying that all of the time. It's like their claim. And good enough, yesterday when Donald Trump was here, his eagerly awaited speech did appease markets. So what he said in Davos didn't stay in Davos. It appeased global markets by backing down on his tariff threats against European countries who would oppose him wanting to take over Greenland. And you know, what I found interesting in his speech, I didn't see that really the media refer to that, was that he referred to this to Wall Street's bull market a couple of times. And I think that was also something that markets like, because markets sense that he still cares about Wall Street. And, you know, from our profession, that's a good thing to know. Meanwhile, of course, another storm is happening in Tokyo's bond market, and it's certainly not staying in Tokyo either. You know, we might wish it would, but it is sending ripple effects through global markets. And here's what's fueling it, in my view. It's the old story. We talked about this a couple of times. Japan's government debt is record high at 250% of GDP. That's more than two times as high as the U.S.'s or any European country's debt to GDP ratio. Now, the upcoming snap election by Prime Minister Takaichi, that's expected to drive debt even higher because she seeks to suspend the national consumption tax for at least 2 years. I don't believe it'll be limited to that, but let's cross that bridge when we get there. And of course, as you can imagine, that's popular with voters, but it certainly got a thumbs down from the bond markets and the bond vigilantes, who sent Japanese yields to new all-time highs in the last couple of days. And what's more, the Bank of Japan's Monetary Board is meeting just tomorrow to discuss whether they should keep or raise rates. And let's just put this into context for a sec. Remember how in summer 24, so not last year, the previous year's summer in August, Japanese rates rose and that caused something like a 10% sell-off in the S&P 500. I remember it took it less than a week. That was because it derailed a global carry trade by which big international investors had all borrowed in yen to invest on Wall Street. But when the cost of funding surged, the carry trade soured, and so investors had to cover their losses and to sell U.S. stocks. So the question everyone's asking themselves and the markets are challenging is, could that repeat itself? Or to put it into the Davos saying, will what happens in Tokyo this week stay in Tokyo, or will it spread to the world? You know, now view is, while Tokyo's storm could well hit global markets too, the more important point is, it too shall pass. That's what I want to stress. It will not cause a Lehman-style financial crisis or a Japanese financial crisis. It will not, we believe, derail the global bull market, because earnings and productivities, we've also been talking about that in the U.S., remain strong and good enough. They improve in Europe and in many emerging economies. And we also believe that inflation and yields in the U.S. and Europe remain on a downward path. But as I said, the Bank of Japan is meeting tomorrow, and frankly, it's in a catch-22 situation, because only recently did they try to exit their long-standing yield curve control policy. But then last year, everything changed. Everything changed last year when the price of rice unexpectedly doubled for a number of reasons. And remember, rice is like a holy food in Japan. And that raised inflation for the first time in many years, caused a big political affordability problem and challenged the decision of exiting yield curve control just when unexpected inflation hit everyone by surprise. And somehow Prime Minister Takaichi has capitalized on this, called snap elections in 2 weeks while promising to suspend consumption taxes and offering more fiscal support. Of course, that wins voters, but it creates a no-win situation for the Bank of Japan. They'll be damned if they raise rates, and they'll be damned if they don't.
Very interesting, Burkhard. So what do you think will happen there?
Well, you know, when forced to choose between two bad options, I think one naturally tries to choose the lesser evil. And so if push comes to shove, I think I'd expect the overriding interest of the Bank of Japan to remain the stability and liquidity of its government bond market. And that's why we believe this storm, too, will pass. I mean, of course, another Japanese bond sell-off is certainly possible. And if it happens, yes, it hits Wall Street, because many Wall Street investors are still in the yen carry trade. But ultimately, if such things happen, that would force the Bank of Japan to weigh again on long yields. You know, it's like a vicious circle. The bigger the vicious circle, the bigger your debt and deficit, the less you can afford to escape from the political necessity of yield curve control. And so I think there are two takeaways here for investors. The one is, don't lose your trust in the global bull market. Even if a storm from Tokyo hits us, it's probably an opportunity to buy and not a reason to run for the hills. And the second takeaway to me is, there's another sense in which what happens in Tokyo doesn't stay in Tokyo, because many, many rich countries across Europe, with the United States, of course, too, are growing their debts and deficits to Japanese levels. And my sense is the Japanification of bond yields will increasingly become a global phenomenon. And that, too, creates a necessity and also an opportunity to save by buying stocks. And by the way, it was funny, you know, as if to confirm this, President Trump yesterday at his Davos speech, he made at least one comment, I noted, that Switzerland's government bond yields are nil. And he got a little agitated and said that so should be the U.S.'s. So you can see the writing on the wall there.
A lot going on in Davos this week, Burkhard, from the sounds of it. What else would you report? Any other takeaways worth noting for our listeners?
Yeah, sure. Well, of course, the big story that was the relief about Greenland, the de-escalation. I should also report Mark Carney gave a fantastic speech, and Merz, Germany's chancellor, was very good too, and so was Macron. But frankly, the most interesting thing to me is this. It's the first, you know, I mean, I've seen this European leaders crowd, political crowd for many years. It seems to me that for the first time I can sense a new business first mantra among a wide variety of European policy leaders. And the most interesting example I found came from EU Commissioner Elisabeth von der Leyen. She introduced a cunning idea of creating what she called a virtual 28th state in the European Union. Remember, the European Union are 27 states. And here's an intriguing and simple idea. If cutting red tape and bureaucracy in 27 nation states seems impossible, like a Gordian knot, then why not untie the knot through creating a virtual 28th EU state with very, very liberal rules for business, really designed on the blueprint drafted by Mario Draghi, Europe's former ECB president. And in this virtual state, she argues, every company and startup can opt to register. So it could, you know, shift from Germany or France or Italy to the 28th state. And she says it'll take less than 48 hours to do so digitally. And once you're in that 28th state, all the business-friendly regulation, from raising capital to labor law and what have you, will automatically have to be accepted by all the other 27 EU states who find it so incredibly difficult to untie the Gordian knot of deregulation. So it's an intriguing idea. It's like a Trojan horse who, you know, how you untie Europe's regulatory Gordian knot. And what was more, she persuasively explained how, politically speaking, this idea, she argued, is at a very advanced state. I'll believe it when I see it, but I like what I hear. So, you know, my last comment here is, look, the reality is, without the recent geopolitical storms, I feel such radical thinking, such radical pro-business thinking, pro-competitiveness thinking, wouldn't have happened in Europe. That's just my sense. And what I heard from people who are in positions of responsibility, including her, is good for jobs, good for business, and we believe for European markets and investors.
Well, Burkhardt, fascinating insights from what sounds to have been a very productive trip to Davos. Always great to hear these boots on the ground perspective and catch up with you and to further see some silver lining, even when storms are brewing. So thank you again, Burkhardt, and do look forward to our next conversation.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. Great as always. Have a great rest of the day, Dan. Take care. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.